Intellectual Maneuvers Podcast. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Intellectual Maneuvers Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about politics and being British. There's quite a big political issue going on here, which is Brexit. So we'll probably get onto that as well. So, and it's brought to you by myself, Seb, and
myself, Ben.
Hi, Ben. So,
where are you sort of like on the, there's that on the spectrum, not the autistic spectrum, the political spectrum?
I think I'm sat around about in the centre, in the middle somewhere. You actually, I think, previously once described me as being socially left and fiscally right, which I thought made quite a bit of sense for me. How about yourself?
Yeah, probably something slightly similar, although that's a very sort of like crude way of telling someone where you are, but I prefer to sort of like talk about individual topics and then say what your stance is on them.
That's fair.
I think the sort of like left, I mean, it's probably quite useful, the left and right thing, but then it's probably also quite limited, isn't it? And quite sort of like archaic. I'm probably quite, there's things I know what I definitely am and there's things I'm not too sure about. The stuff to do with the economy is the area where I'm a bit not as clear what my views are. Everything else, which is pretty much all the social stuff, I'm quite left. I mean, I generally, what I do is, and this probably could be a mistake, but I kind of split my politics into two categories, like anything to do with the economy and then everything else. And everything else, I'm, as far as I'm aware, like quite left. I wouldn't say I'm far left, but I'm more than just center left. I mean, I'm completely like, legalize all drugs, have sex with who you want, marry you want. I'm completely atheistic. Don't care about religion. What else? Just abort. I'm pro-choice. I think most things you can think of, and I'm just far left. And a lot. And the thing that annoys me is people will say, "Oh, the far left are snowflakes," but it's actually the right that are actually sensitive, because why do they care? It's just like, if there was a transsexual down the street, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, let them do what they want. I don't care. I've got my life. If they want me to say, call them whatever pronoun, I just do it. I don't care. It's like, just, we need to be compassionate, and we need to just live and let live, really.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, I think one of the things that's kind of clouded the issue with the left is the adoption of political correctness, which can start to get a little bit squiffy and confusing and a bit kind of limiting on terms of what language you can and can't use. It's like, it's just language. It's more about the intent behind the language you use rather than the language you use, in my opinion. There's a really good monk debate, isn't there, with Jordan Peterson, Stephen Fry, and a couple of advocates for political correctness.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, there's a black guy and a white lady. Yeah,
that's correct. Yeah. on the left hand side of the table or whatever.
See, I just did it then. Identity politics.
There you go.
But it was. He was like a preacher or something from America, and she was.
Yeah, he was.
But also, there's nothing wrong with saying black and white. But I think you're talking about, which I agree with, identity politics, and like the identity politics is just, there's a lot of it on the right as well with like racism, color, ethno state stuff. I think, and yeah, I agree. I'm completely identity politics. I'm just not interested in. But it does automatically, people, I think it's a left wing issue, don't they? Generally, with a lot of the straight white male cisgendered stuff, but that's only a sort of small minority of the left, and it's a shame because like you always get sort of like tarred with the minority, don't you? And it's like most people in the left are decent people, and probably most people on the right are probably decent people as well. It's just slightly different views.
It's kind of like extremism within religion. So, you know, extremism can be really toxic, and extremism with political views is equally as toxic, and leads to kind of a blinkered way of thinking where you're putting up the shutters and you just get your placard board out and you're doing a protest if you're on the left, and it's, you're sort of screaming and dancing around and getting all upset about things. That's the extreme portion, which is indeed the minority, and unfortunately they're muddying the waters a little bit for what is otherwise just live and let live, like you say, which is far more kind of socially where I lean. I really don't have a problem with anyone doing anything. I guess.
As long as you don't harm someone.
Yes.
It's like, you know, just live and let live. Let everyone be happy and do what they want. And that, you know, I don't know. I just think the people that write are kind of a bit sort of like sheltered, maybe, and a bit like they can't open their minds to other ways of thinking.
Conservatism
generally. It's like,
I was going to say conservatism in general. Yeah.
You know, like they've got, I mean, it's quite a religious thing, isn't it? Where they've got this religion is generally a right wing thing, I think. And in that in itself
seems to be.
Is resistant to change. It's, I don't know. It's just very, I don't know. But then you do get a lot of people that are live and let live. But yeah. So I think we're quite the same with that. And then sort of like economically, I'm not really sure. I'm more right from my position left on socialism, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm right wing conservatism. I mean, it's hard to know really. I mean, if you look at in the UK, the sort of difference between Labour and sort of Lib Dems and conservatives is not really that much difference. And we're all kind of dotted around the centre anyway, or maybe slightly to the left. We're not that polarised.
Yeah.
I mean, I think actually economically, the setup we have in our country is actually quite good compared to a lot of countries in the world. We're, you know, in the top 10, I think. But I do think there is room for improvement, but I don't really know enough about it to know the sort of like, I can say what the positives would be. I don't know if there's going to be any negative knock-on effects negatively. So that's why I'm a bit out of my depth, really.
You're talking purely economics still.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about specifically, I think that we have a problem with a distribution of wealth in this country. But I don't know exactly how that is and a way of resolving it. Some solutions I would say were tax the rich more. But you have to be careful with doing that. And there are, because
they'll jump ship and start banking in Luxembourg anyway.
Well, it so depends. This
you'll
is the
tax,
thing.
Be taxing nothing.
Well, this is the thing. It all depends. Yeah, well, exactly. If you corporation tax is 19% now. It was 20% with Labour. Now that's good for business because, like, the fiscal policy from like the Conservatives, they want to improve business, which then provides more jobs, which is good for the economy. So I get that. And if you raise corporation tax, then these big corporations might just leave and put their headquarters somewhere else, which is then have a negative effect on the economy elsewhere. So you could say, okay, maybe increase income tax, personal income tax. I mean, it stops at 45%. Maybe it should keep going up. So maybe I think it's once you get to 150 grand, it's then at 45. Maybe once you get to 500,000, it goes up to 50. And then maybe when you get to like 5 billion, it goes up to 55. I don't know. You stop because this maybe have a few more bands at a lot higher rates because, you know, if you're getting 10 billion in a year and you're paying half of that tax, you still got 5 billion, mate. You're still laughing. Like your quality of life is still brilliant. But like you say, you don't want to put... Also, like loopholes in tax havens as well. I think loopholes.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah, they need to stop. Like, if you live here, the money's here. Like, also tax evasion in companies. You can also have taxes on luxury items, which my friend mentioned, which I thought was a good idea. So, like, ridiculous paintings. Just put some sort of tax on them. Just stuff that only the rich are literally going to buy, but it's just a complete luxury. It's not essential to living. And there could be a list of them and they're like highly taxed.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a pretty neat solution.
One of the
means I've heard discussed about in terms of redistributing wealth a little bit is these cryptocurrencies. It's one of Elon Musk's suggestions of how to change the way wealth is distributed, and he's put a lot of money into some Bitcoin startup or other. Yeah. But yeah,
how does that work then?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, mate.
I've
just heard about it as an idea.
But you mentioned it was a way of distributing wealth. I'm just curious because it's just another. Yeah, okay. If you don't, that's fine. Also, I don't know. Maybe it's worth like coming up with some system where you can sort of like quantify the sort of like benefit of a particular job or how important it is, and then somehow that has a different tax band associated with it. So, for example, like, for instance, maybe doctors, like, for instance, so if you're a footballer, or maybe like what jobs are essential to life and being healthy. So we sort of like stand back and like, right, what's, it's kind of like crucial for life, living, being healthy, and your things like what, having doctors.
Yeah, which helps society at large, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And then you've got things like, okay, footballers, well, really, that doesn't massively as much. So because it doesn't as much and they're earning so much more money, their tax bands could be higher. So you've got like basically your career field, maybe different career fields have different
tax bands. As well.
I don't know.
That's an interesting idea. I mean, who would be the judge of that? That's a tricky one, isn't it? But
The government would be and have to get voted through. But I don't know, maybe sort of like more thought could go into the tax system, because it's like, what is it at the moment? You've got like income tax, you've got the first, what, 12 grand free, then it's like, I don't know, 20%, 40, 45. It's quite basic. And yeah, I definitely think you could tax the rich more somehow without them wanting to leave the country. And
yeah, well, I think the comment actually about luxury goods is quite a neat suggestion, because it's not just a blanket kind of tax that they'll have to pay. It's if they choose to buy something of this value and of this kind of glamour, do you know, if they've got the vanity to spend, let's say, £100,000 on a painting to put on their wall and not even understand it because they're not creative. It's just like a stamp of their success, sort of. Then, yeah.
Like a VAT. So, like, whatever it is, plus 30% goes in. So they, you know, they buy something for 100 grand. They've got to give 30 grand to the government in tax, something like that. I don't know. But definitely, I don't know, things like that we'll be considering, closing loopholes, closing ways for them to pay expensive sort of like accountants to like hide stuff abroad. Business companies do it as well. They avoid.
Yeah, I mean, is that not impossible though? Because I mean, people are just corruptible, aren't they?
Well, I don't know. I don't know exactly how they do it, but I mean, I'm sure if we stopped spending money in other places, we could maybe put some money into rewriting tax codes or I don't know. This is the thing. This is why I'm out of my depth, but I'm just giving you an idea of sort of like what my thoughts are with sort of like distribution of wealth and stuff, and how, you know, I don't want to take away, if someone's worked really hard and they've earned a lot of money, I don't want to take that away from them. But you've got to look at quality of life. And it's like going from like 10 billion to 15 billion, or even like a billion to 10 billion, like your life really isn't going to change that much. In fact, all that's going to happen is you're probably going to get more hassle. And so that's why I'm talking about a distribution of wealth of some way. Once you've got to a certain point, it's like, once you've got past like 60 grand a year income to your household, anything else is just decoration. Like, as long as you've got shelter and love and food and spare time, it's like, there's a lot of people that don't. And it's not necessarily take all of it from the rich, but just take some more to allow us to bring everyone out of poverty. If we could work out, like,
I mean, I think it's a good idea. And I mean, indeed, we're just kind of laymen kind of bounding around some creative ideas as to how to solve what's clearly a massive fucking problem. We may be naive to some degree, but I think they're interesting ideas. I wish they were kind of discussed. But there you go. Well, we're discussing it now. So,
yeah. But then you can sort of like start thinking conspiratorial, can't you? Well, the politicians been paying off, are they, to vote certain ways? Who knows?
I mean
who are their friends that they want to, or it's even them as well, their wealth, isn't it? They want to look after themselves. They don't want to pay more. Most politicians are in the higher rate tax bands. Well, they are. They're earning isn't it like it's over 70 grand a year, like, so they're in the, I don't know, they might not be. I'm not sure, actually. Maybe it's, I think they're in the 40% tax. I'm not actually sure. I need to look.
I mean, they're not even the ones that we're really talking about kind of clamping down on.
No, but
it's the ultra rich, isn't it? And the, I think the tax on the kind of luxury items is quite a.
No, but it's the MPs that will get it through. That's what I'm saying. And if they've got a personal bias against it, it will prevent them.
Well, yeah, the people that are funding their bloody campaigns are going to be breathing down their neck. Like, don't push that through, you bastard. Like, we fund your election campaign, so we'll pull money out if you decide to do that. And then it's blackmail, isn't it? It's like democracy.
Yeah. Well, it's called it's not quite democracy, isn't it? We've always got these like words for things to make them sound nicer. Like, you and me call it blackmail, or sort of like manipulation, or buying someone out. They call it lobbying.
So
I think we're kind of in a similar sort of place. I think a lot of people are, really. To be honest with you, I never really looked into politics that much until like the last couple of years or so, just sort of like reading up on.
I think that's the case with a lot of British people. The Brexit thing has really motivated a lot of people to get involved, you know. Before, it just seemed like a faraway thing that you had no chance of kind of having a voice in at all. You know, voting figures have been consistently going down for years and years and years because politicians are politicians. No one really trusts them. They just have their little squabbles about the left and right, you know, playing party politics. One group's shouting at the other, denouncing all their ideas as rubbish and that we'd do it better. And that's what they do. It's like they're just in this really fancy building with the green leather seats and they're just hurling abuse at each other, basically, in a very posh accent.
Yeah. To be fair, we have got, I think we were quite pioneers in a political system for the world. We've got one of the best sort of like democratic setups, I think.
Once upon a time, I think our political class has actually kind of atrophied and shriveled into a self-serving bunch of mofos. And I think actually the whole Brexit thing has kind of made that, you know, like really clear that they don't really know what they're doing. They're experts of nothing. And I mean, how the negotiations have gone is, well, it's barely been negotiating, really. We've just, it's been quite shocking.
Yeah. Just before we come on to Brexit, because I can feel us drifting.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that as well. Like, I was brought up kind of, I think, right wing, really, everything. Like, I don't know. It's weird. It's kind of hard. My dad, like, reads the Daily Mail, and he's kind of, I guess, in some ways, programmed to be right wing. But when you really talk to him, he's not. I think it's just all his media sources are right wing. And what does that even mean? Like, I don't know. It's weird. It's confusing. Well, I think it's an older generation as well, isn't it? Particularly against immigrants and stuff. People are less sort of
open
to it. But just final comments I wanted to make about politics in this country is I think definitely the proportional representation would be a lot better.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, we didn't even discuss that. That would be so much better.
Yeah, which I don't know why they don't pass that through. I don't know if, well, I think the we've got a two-party thing, haven't we? We've got Labour, and I think maybe they're scared because, they're going to lose power, aren't they? Because all these like UKIPers and the Lib Dems, they'll be growing, won't they? There'll be more. It's better for us because there'll be more spread, but maybe for Labour Conservatives, they don't want it because.
I guess that's absolutely it. You know, I mean, they just kind of like to keep the status quo, don't they? I mean, proportional representation would be a massive step in the right direction as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's a shame that that's not how it is. It seems very a retarded way of doing things, basically, how it is currently. But then, you know, you get your counties and stuff with their leaders, and then they have a seat in the House, don't they?
Yeah, and they've got like two constituents. It's like a farmer and a couple of sheep. That's all there is in there. And he gets a representation. But online tests are quite good as well. I don't know if you've ever done like, is it the YouGov or something? You can type in, there's one like, what UK political party am I most, you just type it in Google, or you can do like a political compass test. So the political compass tells you where you are on the spectrum. It doesn't necessarily tell you what party to vote for. It will just say, are you left inclined, right? And then there's an up and a down, which is sort of like authoritarian and then something else. I did one of them and I think it was Lib Dems. It said like, I was like 79% Lib Dem, which I always have been really. Whenever I've done these tests, I've always been Liberal Dem, Democrats, which is a similar, I think it's the closest, it's in the middle of Labour and Conservatives. It's kind of more centrist. I think they're a bit left and they're a bit right sometimes. I think it's the closest thing we've got to the sort of like Scandinavian models. It's kind of a more of a social democracy. So they've kind of, it's still a very capitalistic society with democracy, but they have a lot more of a social safety net to help with wealth distribution, helping out the poor, and maybe to like higher taxes as well. But I mean,
yeah, and as well, they're quite liberal. So all social things that we've previously mentioned, such as gay marriage and drug issues and stuff like that, they're far more open-minded and progressive on the matters, you know.
They're miles away, though, aren't they? They're nowhere near the Labour. And I think Nick Clegg screwed it up, didn't he, when he went in the coalition with Dodgy Dave and went back on his student fees. That's what destroyed them, really.
Yeah, it was, and it was unfortunate because, I mean, how much of a hand did he have in that coalition? I imagine, really, it was pretty much the Conservatives bossing around the Lib Dems. So I don't know how much choice he had, but I suppose he did agree to go through with it. But yeah, it really, kind of caused the end for them, which is a shame. Yeah, Lib Dem would be where I'd align to.
But it's just, how do you vote? This is the thing, because it's like, I don't know how I would vote. I mean, I'm kind of tempted. I've always voted tactically, like Labour or Conservative. But do you know what? I might just think, fuck it, I'm going to vote Lib Dem and just stick with what I believe in. And they won't come in. They won't come in. But I don't know, like, but then I'm taking away my vote from what I'd prefer out of, everyone else probably isn't doing what I'm doing. So if I did want to go for, say, Conservatives, I'm then just putting Labour in, which is actually a worse off position for me. I'm shooting myself in the foot in some ways. But to be honest with you, I don't even know who I want to vote out of Conservative and Labour, because it's like they're both pretty liberal. Like they're not like, they're both like gay marriage, abortion. It's all to do with the economy. That's what we're voting for, is how money, it's all about money, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
We've talked about the social stuff, but to be fair, England's just England. It's and like in their manifestos, it's hard to know what the tax bans would be. I mean, if Labour said that they were going to do something like taxing the rich like that, and it was clearly obvious, and in their manifesto it showed you their sort of like tax bans, I'd go for Labour. I'd vote Labour. But a lot of people are concerned about Corbyn's leadership skills, and he's kind of a bit too socialistic, and you can't have just socialism. You've got to have, you need a capitalistic society with a social safety net, like the social democracy, because you can't just have one or the other.
Yeah, indeed. A balance, basically.
It's taking the best the best out of both worlds.
In the discussions recently that I've been watching in the House of Commons and stuff, I've not heard Corbyn say anything useful, to be honest. He just straight away turns it into party politics again, just denouncing everything the Conservatives are doing currently and saying that we'd do it better. He also then tried to push for a general election, essentially, which I think at the minute is a little bit like irresponsible, or I don't see what he's going to achieve by that. I don't like the guy.
It's something quite shifty about him. Labour need what's the word? When you redo your image, your public image, like even that Lord Adonis, you know, Lord Adonis, have you heard of him? He's a Labour sort of like, and I was watching a debate with him and Nigel Farage, and I was like, that guy's impressive. He's got his head screwed on. Because Labour have got this bad image, haven't they? Do you agree, or they're not?
Confidence.
I mean, at the moment, you don't think, like the Conservatives, at least, you know, they get shit done. They've kind of got their stuff together. Labour just seem a bit wishy-washy. I don't know.
Yes, yeah, I'd agree. I think...
Wet blanket.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Tony Blair, he had a kind of level of astuteness about him. He was a bit slicker. I mean, obviously he turned into a bit of a war criminal, etc. But there was a professionalism and a sharpness about him. I mean, he was a fantastic communicator that since then they haven't been able to kind of get hold of. I mean, Gordon Brown, then Ed Miliband. It's like, oh, dearie me. And now Corbyn, who he's different for sure. And he's certainly won the hearts of a lot of the younger side of Labour. I remember seeing things all over Facebook when he came in to the House of Commons and stuff without kind of a neat tie done up.
Yeah, yeah.
I think was a bit of a branding exercise. And David Cameron fell straight into it and was like, oh, look at this man. He can't even dress right. his little Oxford crew in the background just like, finding it very funny. And Corbyn was just like, ah, well, that worked beautifully. Yeah. So it's like, and it worked, you know.
It's a shame, though, isn't it, that it has to, and the public do this. We vote on personalities and we vote on stupid things like that. It should be on the facts. It should be like, emotions. This is our policy. No, but it should be, this is our policy. These are the facts. This is what we're going to do. And it, like, even in the manifesto, it should be completely clear. We're not going to go into war, any countries. These are our plans. This is what we do. And it needs to be like, boom, that's what we are.
But mate, the problem is as well that they say they're going to do one thing. This is politics in general again.
And they change their mind.
And they do something else. It's hard to trust. It's hard to know where you stand when you're dealing with people that are essentially, in my view, kind of like glorified criminals.
What do you mean criminals?
They're just, well, corruption, just in general.
Well, not all of them are. I mean,
well, no, of course.
It probably does happen. It's probably
image of politicians, isn't it?
Well, it depends. I think the more problem is the whole thing about, is it a career politicians? It's like, are you actually doing this job because you care about your constituency and you want to get changes made for the people you represent? Or are you doing it for a career? And then if you are doing it for a career, it's like you're just going to play the game. So you're just going to want to go wherever you can. So you've got a job. Which I think is a lot of, I think why some people are pro-Euro, because I think they can then go into Europe and continue their career in there. But that's more the career side. But I think the actual lobbying corruption, it doesn't happen with that many people, because it may happen with some, but I mean, yeah, I mean, it would only happen with like Labour. It would only happen. Well, why would they do it with like, I don't know, maybe they are. I don't know. I've got a theory that Farage might have been paid off by a load of people. I've been watching some of his documentaries and I don't trust him at all. Right. He's got no interest in the facts. It's all about his agenda. But what do you think is going to happen with Brexit then?
I have no real idea. I think there's a chance at this rate that we could end up crashing out with no kind of deal at all. They're gridlocked, aren't they? I mean, I really do hope it does go back to the people. Because at this point, I mean, what did Theresa May herself say? No deal is better than a bad deal. And then she tried to push through a bad deal.
I think that's all part of the negotiation process, though. It's calling their bluff.
I don't see us having called their bluff a lot. I see.
Oh, no, we haven't. We haven't. This is the thing.
The European Union have been calling our bluff, and they're just remaining absolutely resolute on what they've said.
They're not even calling our bluff. They said late last, there was negotiations for a while, and they said, okay, this is the deal. I don't think the EU have done anything wrong. We've decided to leave. Like, we've like caused the disruption, and they've said, okay, here's the deal. And they're just legally protecting themselves and all the member states. They're looking after their own. We've decided to leave. I don't think the EU have done anything wrong. And I think that, like you say, politicians do change. I don't think we're going to go out with no deal. Even over like the economic consequences are now becoming so clear that no one wants that. Yeah. That's just a no brainer. So
they've made it essentially illegal, haven't they? But in the absence of a deal, that's presumably we're going to end up with no deal. The deadline's going to come and that's going to be that. We push the actual crunch time Yvette Cooper tried to do that, but they voted it down.
You tried to extend it?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Well,
Yvette Cooper from Labour tried to extend Article 50's action point or whatever you call it.
When did she do that?
There was a vote last Tuesday, I believe, on a whole bunch of key factors. And I think pretty much the only thing that they voted like unanimously on was that there is no deal is not allowed.
Off the table, yeah, which isn't legally binding, but they're saying we don't want no deal. Okay, so you've got to think about this logically. If they don't want no deal, then they have to extend it, or they have to do a referendum and then extend it. Now, the EU probably, Theresa May is going to come back and say, look, I think they've already said they're not going to budge on the deal. The deal is the deal. EU are not going to budge. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've all said they don't want a no deal because it's going to ruin the economy. So, like, the members of parliament that you've got to decide, are they going to take the deal, which at the moment most of them have voted no, or they then put it back to the people for a referendum. And the referendum will probably be slightly different from last time because they don't want to upset democracy. It will be, do you want to remain or do you want this deal? Because before it was like remain or Brexit, but we didn't know what Brexit was.
Yeah, precisely.
And we were lied to quite a lot and misinformed, which we can come on to in a bit. But I don't see any other way of them. And I've got no problem with it. And I know a lot of the Brexiteers are like, you know, it's questioning democracy, but it's not. It's more democracy. It's like, okay, we voted for it. Now we've realized we didn't really know what we were voting for. Let's at least ask the people again, because we're more informed now.
Yeah. And a whole bunch of the items have come to light that make it so difficult and how just overwhelmingly complicated the issue is. That people have got to take that on board. And if they're not, then they're just being childish. If they're kind of stamping their feet like democracy's democracy, it's like, yeah, but it wasn't really democratic, the referendum in the first place, because it was so vague. No one was really educated on the matter, and we just chose blindly based on some emotional kind of knee jerks, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, like you say, it's very black and white to just be like, yeah, democracy's democracy. And I kind of do understand their point, but I don't think it holds that much weight, because it's clearly obvious that, and even Nigel Farage admitted it, we didn't know much at all. We were lied to. I mean, I know I've changed my mind like 100%, and I can explain exactly why. But yeah, I don't think it does undermine democracy in this country. I think it's a sensible decision. They've come to a gridlock. It wasn't expected to happen like this. We didn't expect to be in this stalemate.
Well, it's unprecedented, isn't it? It's completely. We've never been through this before. No country has.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so to say that another vote on the shape and size of the issue we voted on before is undemocratic. Yeah, like you say, it's not. It's just more democracy.
Well, I think it's fair. I mean, they've definitely said there's going to be, if they're saying it's going to be no deal is off the table, that means a hard Brexit's gone. So the choices are soft Brexit, which is the deal from the EU, or we remain. And I think they're going to put it to the, I think they'll extend the deadline for later on this year and put the vote to the people. That's what I'm hoping anyway.
Yeah.
I don't want all these, like, I like going to my local Polish shop. I don't know if you've ever been to these like Polish shops, like they've got some lovely food in them. But anyway, before we come to that, did you vote Brexit first time round?
I'm ashamed to say I did.
Me too. Me too. Why did you vote?
Because I heard
racist.
This.
You're a racist bastard. Yeah, no.
Screw you. I want to preface this by saying that I'm racist. Certainly not.
Anyone that says I'm not racist, but I'm
only joking. So why did you vote to leave then? I can put that back.
Okay, well, to be honest with you, I didn't really do any research into it. And it was basically going by what my sort of like perception of the media was telling me, which was, I think the Brexit campaign were a lot more vocal about it. And for me, I believed that, what did I believe? I believed that we didn't have control of our laws and legislation.
That was my thing.
Which,
it was a matter of principle that politics should be done for England in England.
Yeah, well, that was my original thing, which is actually not the case.
Second
one was I believed that immigration was bad for the economy. I thought that it had a negative impact. And what was the other reason as well? I can't remember now. There were some other reasons as well. There was the economy. My mind's gone blank. What are the sort of like generic? There's like sovereignty, isn't there? There's not being controlled. Well,
there was the old, there was that red bus, wasn't there, that we're giving this much money to the European Union each year. We could put that into the NHS instead.
Okay, yeah, so there's that as well. Yeah, there was actually, is our economy benefit? That's it. So there's immigration, there's law, the control of our laws and legislation, and then there's actually the economy itself. Are we benefit from it? Now, that was what I kind of was going by. I'm not at all racist. I've got no problem. Like, and I was just like, yeah, sounds like makes sense to me, and I just voted. But since researching into it, the facts are undeniable, and the position I'm in now is there is literally no argument for Brexit unless you're just an open racist. That's the only argument for it, and that's fine. If you want to be a racist, be a racist, but I can't see I try and weigh up all the pros and cons for each one. And racism on a personal level could be a reason. If you don't want, if you want to keep England, but it's not though. This is the thing, because, sorry, I'll just like, sorry, ranting a bit. The sort of like the far right white supremacists, or, you know, whatever they are, the racists, xenophobes that are, that, and there's not that many of them. I don't think, I think most of the Brexiteers were originally like me, what I described. They thought it was bad for the economy and stuff, and they wanted control. But there are some racists, and the things they don't realize is if we leave the EU, you can't stop immigration. Like, so instead of having like these white supremacists, instead of having like Europeans coming into this country, which they won't be anymore, the world will be opened up to other ethnic minorities, which I'm assuming they will find worse for their personal racism, if that's what, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah,
like Asians and Africans and the white supremacists, I'm assuming, would rather have white people from Europe coming over. So even from a racist point of view, you can't stop immigration. You can still let this, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so some of my reasons basically for originally choosing to leave was, as you were saying, the kind of the thing of the economy, like we're giving all this money to the European Union. There's more countries coming into the European Union, which sort of concerned me a little bit, countries that maybe aren't ready for something like the European Union. And so the current member states would essentially just be bailing them out, giving them money, which I found a little bit bizarre. At the time, I lived in a village, a posh little village. I rented a little cottage there. And in the local pub, there was a lot of business owners, quite well-to-do entrepreneurial types, who basically were just continuously lambasting the European Union. And that so some of them worked in aerospace and engineering and things like this. And they were saying that the kind of bureaucratical processes of engineering and stuff that the EU has brought in has just kind of crushed their trades, and that England as such has sidestepped out of actually producing a lot of stuff that we used to do. Yeah. It was these kind of reasons, really. I mean, the whole immigration thing was a non-issue for me anyway. I like diversity.
Yeah,
I kind of value it, to be honest. That was never even on sort of my radar. It was more the principle about the laws being made elsewhere, which is a load of tosh, and we can kind of get into that in a moment. That's it in summary, really.
Well, I think we can sort of like gloss over everything and sort of like quite easily put a case forward why Remain's better. I just want to say there are pros and cons for both. I'm not saying that like there might be some industries that since we were in the EU might have been negatively affected somehow, like you said, by increased bureaucracy. Like, it's not going to be a clear, like, there's always, do you know what I mean? There are going to be pros and cons to the other, but I think we need to just like take a step back and look at it from the overall picture.
I'd just like to add something actually to that idea of added bureaucracy. Upon the UK voting to leave, a whole bunch of additional information started flooding out, obviously, because people were really upset. And so people were putting forth why it's a bad idea. And really, that added bureaucracy really is more actually just protecting workers' rights, etc. So it's kind of just improving the quality of life for workers, which the EU has put in.
The EU isn't an evil organization. It's a good organization. I mean, obviously it was initially for like peace times and stuff, but it's good. It's a good little thing. We're all working together. Europe is probably the best continent in the world. We can all trade together. We're the strongest economy. Like, but let's talk about the economics of England. Like, if you look at the economics since we joined the EU, which was, when was it? Was it 73? I can't remember. No, was it after then? I can't remember the exact date. When did we join the EU?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'd have to.
I can't remember the exact date. But anyway, our economy has steadily been growing. So basically, everything's been fine. Yeah, we've been growing. We've been doing quite well in this country. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, I know you can talk about individual industries. Maybe might have been negatively affected. Some might have benefited. Like, logistics, you know, the fact we've got, you know, like for instance, my girlfriend, where she works, she'll get like transport that comes from Russia. And instead of it driving, it comes on a ship, gets dropped off at England, then comes into the sort of Europe. So there's going to be pros and cons from specific industries. But I'm just stepping back and saying generally, the economy is doing quite well. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. So from that point of view, like just looking at the GDP or GDP per person, per capita, we're doing good. So from that point of view, why mess it up? Like, and we can already see a lot of evidence of investments being pulled out, countries, sorry, corporations leaving. Like, it's already affecting the economy negatively now. And all the economic professionals or the economists are forecasting that it's going to negatively affect our economy for a couple of decades. So, you know, that to me is like, okay, Brexit's bad on that point of view, you know.
Yeah.
Unless there's something I'm missing. I mean, I'm trying to be as I don't have a bias. This is the thing. Like, I wanted Brexit to be true. My bias, in fact, me coming out of my Brexit bias is kind of now been quite refreshing to kind of as a personal development exercise and actually just assessing the evidence and not being brainwashed by personalities.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the problem, isn't it? That the evidence is now coming forth. Like, I did research when we were, it had the decision on the table, basically, and part of my research was talking to older, presumably wiser people in the village I was living in at the time. You know, these people were successful people. I thought they knew their shit. So that was one part, and then I'd go and fact check essentially what they were saying as best I could, obviously, and it seemed to correlate to some, or it seemed to add up to some degree, but since Brexit has happened, there's been, you know, a plethora of new articles and studies and information, basically, into actually the case of things. And yeah, it's as with you, since you've been soaking up all this new research, you just can't help but change your mind.
Well, that's the that's the beauty of being open-minded, isn't it? You know, I don't mind changing my mind. It doesn't dent my ego. But I mean, so, and there's the other thing. So let's move on to immigration. Now, I thought immigration was having a negative effect on the economy, but it's not.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that I would always say to anyone who would get into the immigration thing is that a lot of the people coming over to work are often harder working people than what I've met than English people.
No, you're totally right. Like, my girlfriend's European and all her friends. Yeah.
Their work ethic's stunning. There's nothing, there's no problem with that. So, and as well, they're often likely to do the kind of jobs that English people consider themselves too above. Do you know what I mean?
No, you're totally bang on. No, you're completely
more
right.
Down to earth. They're coming from less. They're harder working, and they get the idea of
They appreciate what this country can offer them as well, and they know they respect it and they want to value it. They don't just want to take out of it. Most immigrants that come here are younger, so they're of a working age, and that's why it's good for the economy, because they're net contributors. So they are paying more tax collectively than they're taking out of the economy. So if all the immigrants suddenly now got up and left, every single one. We'd have to pay more tax.
We'd have more doctors or nurses anymore, mate.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's another thing. A lot of businesses would shut down because we've got so many people, like you say, doing certain jobs, especially like hospitals and stuff. And, you know, you can't. And the thing is about asylum seekers, like people coming from, you've got to have some compassion, man. If these people have got on a boat, right? So this is different from immigration. This is like illegal immigration, isn't it?
Asylum seeking. I mean, that's kind of a different category anyway, isn't it?
No, it is. But the reason why I'm mentioning it is people group it all, the psychology of people with Brexit, they group it all into one thing and they don't realize it's all different. Like, so for example, our immigration system, we can control it outside of the EU. By being in the EU, we've got free movement within, but we can still control who comes from other countries. Now, not many people know that. We can still control that. The EU aren't telling us what to do. We can still control who comes from other countries. But people don't realize that. And like we've already said, they think immigration is bad economically. It's not. It's good. We would be worse off if they left. But people blame, it's a common phenomenon. People have always blamed minorities for their misfortunes. So, you know, like the Nazis did it to the Jews, like people in this country, let's blame the immigrants. And it's not right, and it's not fair. And it's just it's a problem with human psychology where we just seem to, some people or groups of people tend to do it. So something might not be good in their life. They'll blame on the immigrants coming over here, and it's their fault. They're taking their jobs when they're not.
Yeah, it's easier to do, isn't it? Basically, it's like
scapegoating.
It's like a form of judgment. I read an interesting quote the other day. I can't remember who said it, but people judge because thinking is difficult.
Yeah, and you're just blaming other people. It's even in a relationship, if you've got a problem, we all do it. We don't realize we blame things on other people, but really we don't know it's down to us. But what I was saying about the sort of like asylum seekers, that doesn't matter whether we're in the EU or not. You've got people like Katie, that sort of like right wing
Holmes,
Hopkins.
That's it,
and she's like, just don't let them in, shoot them down. It's like they will cut. They don't care about our politics. They're fleeing like disastrous circumstances in their lives, and not that many of them on the grand scale of things. We can easily afford to let them in and help them, and then they'd probably be decent people. They're not. They're fleeing with their children. Do you know what I mean? Like, have some compassion for these people. So the immigration thing is just completely off the table. So far we've proven immigration is off the table. The economy is doing fine. We've already starting to see negative effects to the economy from Brexit not even happening yet. We've also discussed, actually, from a racist point of view, it's probably better to be in the EU. And then the other thing was control of our legislation and stuff, which again... Yes. Which is what Nigel Farage likes to sort of like, well, basically Nigel Farage has actually been defeated on all these points now. So now he's going on about the EU army. Like, this is why I lost a lot of respect for him. I don't trust him. I just think he wants Brexit, and all his argument, like, you know, he was lying about we can put however much more money into the NHS each year. No, less would go in. The NHS would suffer from Brexit. It was a lie. It was a bust that was going around. This whole thing about control, which he, again, I think he's preying on people's ignorance of how the EU works, because it is democratic. It's just there's three sort of like groups within the EU. There's the EU Parliament, which is like our parliament, where you've got the MPs from each state going, however many you've got, and they vote on stuff. And if something gets voted through, then everyone has to accept it. So if they said, oh, we want this new law or legislation, it was over, then that's why things kind of get forced upon you that you may not want. But it's part of being in the club. It's not like a control thing. It's like you've joined the club, you're getting the benefits, we all do the same thing. Like, it's nothing wrong with that. There's also the commission.
Especially when you look at the things that actually do get pushed through, which are pretty infinitesimal and
exactly
just reasonable.
Things. It's all reasonable. Yeah, it's all reasonable. Yeah. It's like the there's a lot of fear tactics about it. Like, so there's the commission as well, which is voted by the MPs. They're put forward by the MPs. And this is what Nigel Farage says. Oh, they're not democratically elected by the people. Well, no, they're not. But it does change all the time, I think, because that Von Rompuy's down and now it's like Tusk's up there. And it's put forward by the MPs. But anyway, with regards to actually control of our laws and legislations, it's something ridiculous, like under 1% of the laws that were passed through by the EU, we've actually not wanted, but we've had to do it by being part of the club. It's under 1%.
Yeah.
And when you look into what these are, it's ridiculous things like labeling aspartame on certain food products. So arguably, you might look at them and actually think, oh, that's a good idea anyway. It's just because our MP voted against it. So, I mean, it's just a no-brainer. It's just nonsense. I mean, Britain and Germany are actually the pioneers in the EU for proposing all the laws and legislations anyway. So we put forward most of them anyway. We're more advanced than a lot of the countries. So, I mean, I don't know. It just seems to me that it's not an easy, you know, remains better, and I can't see any. We're still an island, you know. We're still sovereign. economy's doing well. Like, I don't, you know, it just seems a bit, if the issues are anywhere, it's with our government.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I would feel really uneasy about enabling our government, in inverted commas, to do all the governing anyway. I'm not sure they're capable in this current state that they're in.
Maybe it's good. Yeah.
You know, they're so split. It's sad to see.
And also the trade deals as well. It's like, by leaving the Brexit, there's immediately going to be a lot of disruption with sort of things. And there is, it's not project fear, it's all true. Like, all the companies are saying it. Food, medical supplies, transport, people are going to lose jobs. Like, it's going to, and then it's going to take, these trade negotiations that we've got take years and years and years to achieve. And we'd be going right back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. We have to start again. It's not something you can do in a week.
This is
Brexit. Yeah. This is one thing. It's taken 2 years.
Yep. Yeah.
And they've got trade negotiations with, like, and the World Trade Organization is very basic. It's not like, what's the word? Trying to think of the word. It's not like perfected. Something that you spent a lot of time creating, and like, yeah, that's the basis that you start off with. Like, that's why the EU have got all these trade negotiations, because it's all, they've perfected it and spent all this time. So the whole thing, Brexit to me is just retarded. It's just like, honestly, I just think it's absolutely retarded. I think people are unhappy with something and they think this is the solution, but they're actually fucking themselves over even more.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think that's contributed to this is the austerity that we've been facing for years since the banking crisis. Yeah. So basically, the banking crisis kicked off, and that had a massive effect, obviously, on our country and the whole of Europe. Now, we've been able to climb out of the hole that the bankers dug because we've got the pound, and we're not kind of, that's a fortunate thing. I'm glad we never went into the euro, because they cannot devalue and boost their economy. They cannot climb out. They are stuck within a whole, value system of the euro, and so they can't get out of it, basically. And so certainly Portugal, Italy, Greece and Spain are really facing some tough times. Obviously Greece is really shafted, but we're not even in that boat anyway, so
exactly. Then that was a wise move.
Yeah it was. And so we've been able to climb out of that, like, better than the rest of Europe, basically, so no problem there. But the austerity that the Conservatives have been kind of dishing out for a good number of years has really crippled a lot of people. You know, I mean, you look at crime rates going up, policing are kind of really facing hard times. They're under budgeted, understaffed, etc. Yep. Homelessness on the rise, people using food banks, etc. So, you know, the country's in a bit of a pickle. And so, people are scapegoating because they're getting a bit desperate. So I guess the whole Brexit campaign was fueling that fire.
Maybe we needed this to happen. Maybe we'll have the second referendum, we'll remain, and then it's going to cause a renaissance in, or maybe people are going to wake up and be more interested in politics. And
wouldn't that be amazing? Like we were saying before, that people have just, the voting rates have been going progressively down for years, and now suddenly everyone's really bloody paying attention, and you know, Facebook is just exploding since the Brexit decision 2 years ago, and it continues to do so. And there's people are far more interested in politics, people are far more motivated. It's interesting as well. I mean, I had such a kind of lack of faith in democracy, in inverted commas. I was surprised to hear that Brexit had happened, for the sheer fact that I knew that most of the MPs, etc., and the government didn't want it to happen. So when it happened, I was like, what the hell? Wow.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean.
Votes actually are counted
that's true. That's a good point. It does. There's a lot of people that have these conspiracies about this one world government, and actually, no, it didn't happen. If it was being faked, then we wouldn't. Yeah, no, you're right. That's a valid point. So I guess that's one positive note. Let's hope we do. Well, I hope we remain. But if we do leave, we'll probably have a good deal with them, so it doesn't affect our country that much. It won't be hard.
I bloody well hope so. Just going back a couple of points, we were talking about the number of laws that are actually impacted, etc., by the EU, which of course was, well, for me, one of my main reasons for voting Leave. I didn't like the idea that we're part of a bigger club that essentially we're getting told what to do. Now, let's just dispel that notion, because out of 34,105 laws, the EU had influence in 4,514. Yep. And out of the EU laws of the 4,514, just 72 of those laws were pushed against our will.
It's like 0.2%, isn't it, or something?
It's on a pie chart. It's basically like a hairline.
What's the figure? It was 79 divided by what's the total?
Sorry, what? Well, 72 votes the EU pushed through.
Okay, and what was the total number of vote of changes that happened?
4,514.
Divided by 4,514. 72 divided by 4,000. Yeah, so that's times 100. But that's 1.6%, but I did it. It's 0.2% of all of the changes. So there was the one that was proposed by us. You got to look at the EU as a whole, because you've got, on the pie chart, you've got three sections, haven't you? You've got the ones that we put forward, which is like as a percentage of all of them put forward. Like, what's the number that we put forward?
Well, the pie chart actually just says no EU influence. And so that's our
laws, so that means it's us.
That we've established, which is 29,591.
Yeah. So from the EU influence, 1.6% of the ones that were influenced by the EU we didn't want. I mean, it's still negligible. And if you actually look at what they are, it's just nonsense stuff. It's not like anything that's that bad.
Yeah, no,
it's just
bureaucracy. The things that I agree with.
It's just nonsense. So... Right, I'm going to have to head off soon. Okay. Great talking to you.
Yeah, indeed. I hope that, I hope that what you said just a moment ago is kind of where it goes, in that...
Wake up call.
A wake up call. It resolves itself, and that it's actually awoken the English people a little bit. I mean, there's still obviously a great deal of split, and there's still a lot of Brexiteers stamping their feet and stuff. If we don't end up leaving the European Union, I dread to think what they're gonna do.
If we don't,
If we don't leave,
it will be a referendum.
Yeah, but if in that referendum we vote to stay this time, then the people that are consistently voting to leave, there's going to be civil unrest, I think.
Maybe, but I'd rather have that than leave the EU. They'll get bored after a while. Look what happens on the news. Something comes on the news after a week, we've forgotten about it.
That's true.
Get on with their lives. They're like, oh, I need to go to work. I want to get pissed and watch the football. They won't care. Right, I've got to go. It's been good chatting.
Indeed.
Speak to you soon.
Bye.